is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and whatever else might come to mind. If you would like to call in, you can, and you can use either the two 800 numbers that are on your screen. So if you'd like to do that, you can. Or you can call paying for the phone call off the regular station number. Tonight, I think I'm going to be maybe confusing some people because I'm using an odd word that most people may not be familiar with, okay? And that word is meritocracy. You know, it sounds like it's almost like something dealing with Christmas or maybe the government or, you know, it's kind of an odd thing. But it maybe it is both, actually. And the spiritual purpose idea, again, comes into the whole context of the show. So if you are at all interested, stay tuned, because this is going to be, I think, something that will give everybody a little, you know, a little pause, something to think about, of course, I hope. And as usual, I'm going to start by defining what I mean, and tonight I better be paying particular attention to that, since some people may not even know what the show is about. All right, what do we mean by meritocracy? That's a type of system of both government and economy and, we'll call it even education, in which, we'll say so generally the lifestyle or society in general, as it's guided by, in which those who can put out their best efforts, or choose to, I should say, rather than can, those who choose to put out their best efforts in whatever they do gain the most in terms of the benefits of their own actions. The society is designed to do that, not just in terms of economy or just in terms of governmental issues, but in terms of everything. And so it involves education and how people may matriculate from certain types of situations if they're going through a degree program, et cetera. It involves all types of areas of society. So do not think that this is just some kind of thing that replaces, like, democracy, which it isn't. It isn't a replacement for it. It sort of can come alongside of it. It isn't a replacement for a specific type of economic we'll say economic plan or method that is used in a society, be it socialism or capitalism, all those ism things, communism. Those things are can again be somewhat alongside meritocracy. However, meritocracy actually precludes, to some extent, strict versions of communism and some, we'll say, versions of socialism. So you should be aware that there you probably do end up with some exclusionary issues. Okay, so that's to begin. That's sort of like the preface of what I'm going to define now. Okay, so we know that meritocracy is when someone is rewarded by putting out their best efforts. It therefore makes sense that if we're defining it that way, and by the way, this is the spiritual definition of meritocracy. It is not the definition in the more conventional sense of the word, because the more conventional sense of the word would state that the best who achieve in any particular area are those that get the most benefit. You see the difference in a spiritual meritocracy compared to what might be conventionally understood in some circles as meritocracy. So there's a wide gulf here, because I'm talking about the spiritual purpose of meritocracy, and that's in the widest spiritual sense of the word, not in its most limited, sometimes conventional use of the word, which is not the original intention, in my opinion, based upon my research and understanding of what was originally meant. So we can have a discussion about that if you'd like, or you can email me, etc. But this is my understanding. Now, this is, and even if I were to be defining it in a way which is not along the lines of some other people, at least as I am using it in today's show, that's what counts in terms of how everything I say today applies. So just so we're on the same track. Okay, so what does that mean? That someone is doing, putting out the most amount of effort that they're able to do, or the closest to that, in getting the most value for their effort in whatever they're doing. How do you set up a society to deal with this and to try to meet these goals, which are very, very difficult to achieve, by the way, because on a societal basis, you're going to have people at all levels of seeking to, we'll say, be responsible, put out the most amount of effort in a particular direction. Some people might say be disciplined in some ways. These are all things that have tremendous variance. And how do you make a society work this way? How do you deal with people who, either karmically or for whatever reason you want to believe, have less general ability, but use that ability to the near maximum level in comparison to those who have much greater or maybe even the greatest abilities, and use it to an average or less than average level, or maybe even to a very low level? How do you deal with that in the more, we'll say, esoteric ways that may not be, we can even figure out, you know? So this is going to be what I'm going to talk about tonight. As I said, this is going to be a challenging show because it is going to have some new ideas in it, some things you may have never thought about. Just in what I've said in the last few minutes, I would imagine it's already getting you thinking, I hope, because this is the quandary that I think we're facing right now in the United States, but also in the world. Now, I'm speaking, of course, from the United States, but many of you are listening from other countries. I know that. And in your countries, you may have already dealt with some of these issues in unique ways, different ways than have even been addressed here in the U.S. But they also may be more or less obscured, because the first concept in meritocracy, in a spiritual sense, is that the first part of our Creator's mind is exalted by it. What does that mean? That means that it's helped in its development. It's perpetuated and increased by any spiritual meritocracy that is promoted. And so when you have this going on, the very aspect of, we'll say, creation, which is the first part of the Creator's mind, and freedom and choice and the consistency of choice, which is will, and beyond that, most of the other elements that are part of this first part of the Creator's mind, also part of the first type of ray energy that some people sometimes refer to. I'm not going to get into that tonight, but it's all part of that package, the first part of the Creator's mind. And it has the most amount of impact on everything, because it is the beginning. Doesn't mean that it doesn't supplant other elements of the Creator's mind, and we'll get into that. But I'm going to cover this first part right now. Creation is so important in freedom. Those are the two that I'm going to kind of link into, because I think a lot of people kind of get that. Like, freedom comes with choice, so we don't have to almost, we can almost say this synonymously. So freedom and creation are extremely important, and in a spiritual meritocracy, those are exalted, meaning that they are brought to the front, they become the most prominent elements that are developed by this particular society. It makes the society more like, in a political sense and in a geopolitical sense, the U.S., than most other societies. Now, why is that? Well, because if we go back in time, and we have to go pretty far back, to the inception of the United States, we look at people that were very advanced for their time. They're more advanced than most people are today in terms of their consciousness. And they believed in spiritual meritocracy. They didn't just believe in any old meritocracy. They truly believed in a spiritual type of meritocracy in which what I was suggesting was at least underneath the surface. There's very little that they said that was directly part of the very definition I gave you that ever made it into the Constitution. It made it into some letters and some elements of the Constitution that came to be known as the constitutional letters and other things that were put forth by the creators of our country here, the founders. And they talked about it probably at length. We don't know. We don't have the transcripts or whatever. But they did, and I think. And it the byproduct of it was the way they constructed the Constitution. And in the beginning, prior to the Constitution, you could almost claim it was a preamble to it, was a Declaration of Independence. And there you see this a similar kind of idea. What does it mean? It means that they first saw that we are created ourselves by a being, a creator, a God, and that we enjoy rights that come from the existence of the way that God itself is. And the closer you get to understanding God, the closer you get to understanding the rights of man, because they come from directly from God. They do not come from government, nor are they bestowed upon people from any other, we'll call it lower, I'll use that word, lower source than God. That's what they started with. And that's how they got to the spiritual meritocracy, because in their thinking now, their processing, we'll say, was to use the very beginnings of their precepts to then develop a government and a society. It was more than a government they were creating. And this is another thing, as I watch some of these political talk shows, etc., I'll tell you, they don't really get completely that this is about a total society than about a specific part of the society, which the government is. You could say, well, weren't they there to found the Constitution and a government? Yes and no. What they really did is they put the very skeleton of a government together, and then they said the people in the next hundreds of years will develop a government, but the government needs to follow these principles. And so that's pretty much what they did. So they didn't really create what we would call a full government in the founders' actions. And even those that became presidents later on or part of the government later on, they only added a little bit at a time to the whole process. But I think the thing that I'm trying to get at here is that their purpose was molded by a spiritual meritocracy more than anything else that guided them. Although I think there were some other factors that may have come into play, especially compromises, especially the terrible ones that were made about slavery and allowing that to continue. That was a huge, huge error. And certain other things that they did that were against the whole precept that they started with. So there were contradictions, and they definitely were not perfect in the way they went about things. Okay, so let's continue on now. If we are looking at the purpose, spiritual purpose of a meritocracy, it is to exalt the first part of God's mind and to make it something so important that it can never be lost, that it becomes the hallmark of a people and maybe a nation and a world. We do not, at any context, have at the present time a meritocracy within our world. Within nations, we have a couple that have some levels of meritocracy built into them that follow some spiritual issues. And interestingly, even on a conventional side, no nation I know of really actually has a completed meritocracy, even if it's conventional narrow view, which unfortunately is relatively, therefore, selfish and not correct. Okay, so the object here is then, where do we go and how do we develop a more full meritocracy, say, here in the United States? And those who are listening in other places, you might consider this in terms of your particular national issues. And let me start by saying that if we're going to go down this road, we need to be pretty open-minded, because remember, I'm suggesting that a meritocracy is not just get those that do the best get everything. That is not what I'm saying. I'm saying those that do the best for their level of ability get the most for whatever they did. And you see, there's a very big difference, almost a huge, like, I mean, it's quite a bit of difference, even though it sounds so similar. They are very, very different from each other. That means we have to now bring in what I call the second part of God's mind in order to modify and fully understand, and I call it enlightenment. Enlightenment comes from joining these two parts of God's mind together. And the second part has to do with inclusiveness and love and givingness and planning and just a whole bunch of ideas that changes meritocracy from just those that do the very best get the most to those who do the best based upon what they are able and responsible and, you know, capable of doing get the most. And then you might say, well, why not give people what they just need and forget about it, like a communist might say. Well, the problem with that is that spiritual purpose includes the idea that only when a person is rewarded for really going the extra length and using the most they have to create the best they are in whatever else they're doing, that they are getting closer to their creator. And that's what the spiritual idea of meritocracy is about, and it's what the founders were looking for, because they were based it upon God. They didn't base it upon some government tenets or some kind of intellectual group of people, committees or whatever, deciding what's good for us and what's not, you see. They decided that those things were all beneath and eventually seriously flawed from what they were seeking. They were seeking the expression of God on earth, be it in a political sense, but also in a societal sense in general. Okay, so does this start? I'm hoping that this is starting to gel a little bit. I realize I'm taking little pieces here and there and building this thing because it's kind of a big thing to wrap your head around. So then the question becomes, okay, we want to include the second part about love and inclusiveness. And the love and inclusiveness comes in because we are not saying that those who are the best at something actually should receive any more. Maybe they should receive even less than those who do their best but have much less capability. That's where you open your mind to a new way of thinking, to joining the two parts of God's mind to become enlightened. Now, did the founders represent that in what they wrote and did? To some extent, in a few ways, yes. To a large extent, no. These were great men, for the most part, who were, unfortunately, somewhat limited in their ability to see a balance between these two elements. And so as time has gone by, here in the United States, there has been a shift to try to balance out so that we are getting a little, we were trying to get a little closer to the full meaning of meritocracy in a spiritual sense. But we have yet to get there. Because one of the failings we have had is that as we have moved towards a balance of ensuring that those who are less capable still receive based upon supposedly their efforts, we have made the mistake of giving to those who are least capable, not based upon their efforts, but based upon their need, which sabotages and aborts the concept of self-creation and makes people into impotent slaves of the state. It promotes all kinds of poverty-driven and poverty-producing types of welfare, and it causes people to lose responsibility and self-achievement as being important in their lives. It takes the very meaning of existence and reduces it to very, very basic low levels, and it punishes those who actually are the most creative. It punishes those who are most creative both, but not less, not necessarily the greatest achievers, because they're not capable of achieving so much, and it punishes particularly those who are the greatest achievers and the most creative. So then you've got a real problem. That leads to a spiraling society towards darkness and eventually evil. It is the inevitable, inevitable result of moving strongly in the one direction at the cost of the other without balancing them. We have been doing that progressively for about 100 years now. And the amount we're doing it is accelerating. The present administration is possibly the most extreme of any in the history of the United States in doing this. And they're making huge errors. The errors are going to destroy their administration, but not before maybe they destroy certain parts of the United States. And maybe the whole world, because we affect the world so much, you see. And others seem to learn from us, whether for good or bad. And they copy us, unfortunately, sometimes. So here we go. We got it. We got some real issues here. And we need, I'm just laying this whole thing out so that we can, you know, come to a natural understanding, hopefully, by the end of this. I realize it is piecemeal. There's too many parts of this to be able to just kind of start at one end and get to the other. Got to bring in a lot of different pieces to show how it all fits together. And it also will encourage, I think, more thought about this. I'm not going to necessarily give you all the answers in today's show, but I'm certainly going to give a lot of questions and suggestions about thinking and about certain things. All right, so here we have an interesting dilemma. The founders were imbalanced too far to the first type of God, part of God's mind. They were tremendously influenced by the need for freedom and choice and will and creativity. And during the first 100 years of our existence or more, we were much more creative than we have been somewhat since that time. And so we've been moving, it sort of shifted around. But during the first 100 years, we were influenced more by the founders. But there was something lacking, because too much of the time, those who were less capable were not finding that they were being rewarded in either meaning in life or some material sense or even some spiritual sense from them doing their very best. They weren't being rewarded as much. Our society was overlooking that. And this didn't matter whether it was in education or government or economy, the physical reality of the world. It seemed to be happening everywhere. And so there are those who decided, somewhat led by women, by the way, who tend to think more in the second rate part, or second type of God's mind, more than the first. So as women became more active, their movements the temperance movement, the progressive movement, which is probably including everything I'm talking about, it tended to move towards the second part of God's mind, and it caused a major shift, which created a real serious amount of problems at the beginning of the last century, and ended up by about 1920 being pretty much people didn't like it, except that they did and were adopting, had already adopted in the governmental regime, methods that were antagonistic towards the first part. And there was too much of a desire to have government control things. And this is thoroughly rejected over time, but not at great cost to the society. So there has been this overall, we'll say, pattern in wave. And we need to find the balance, because the balance is only the only solution to keeping things going, particularly at the present time, more than ever. So that's where we're at. By the way, I didn't ask, but I believe we're able to go to 8:15, or not 8:15. It depends where you are, of course. Go on to an extra 20 minutes to 15 minutes after the hour that we normally would be ending the show. So we're going to have a longer show today, I believe. I'll let you know after the break, but I think that's going to be the case. And so we're going to be able to carry on and talk more about this. And so don't concern yourself if it isn't quite coming together yet. I hope it is. All right, so what we see here is that the founders were really over on one side, particularly women, but what we'll call is the progressive movement was over on the other side, and the never the quain shall meet was really the hallmark of this last century, with a great deal of political battling going on, and unfortunately a non-solution so far developed, because spirituality has to be part of the process. It's one of the reasons the present administration probably is going to really badly fail. Okay, spirituality is part of what the founders originally came up with, but it has to be part of also any other elements. So if you say, well, I am a progressive, I believe that the government should take care of everybody, there should be a safety net for everything, and they should tell us what we should do and what we shouldn't do, etc. That's a problem, because then what you've done is you've replaced God with a government. Or you've replaced God with people in the government who think that they're smarter than God. And they don't believe in God, most likely. They don't have any belief in anything other than themselves, which makes them arrogant. So you see, there we have a real issue. Because if we're going to get to the solution, we may have to eliminate those who at present believe that they know better, are arrogant about it, and are seeking to control, literally, others, the rest of the people. They don't feel the way they do and don't think the way they do. So that no spiritual meritocracy could ever be developed around them. Something to consider. Now, what are some of the ways that we can improve in the present society we're in, provided that we don't get interfered with by a growing obstructionist government that is seeking tyrannically to change us away from the concepts of a meritocracy? Well, one thing I would start with is in education. I like the idea of educating young people, particularly, in a way which is spiritually meritocratic, because it allows those young people to experience it while they're also learning. So that's a great way to bring it in as a stronger element in society. But it also means it's something that has been a taboo in most public forum education has to be changed. And this is another battlefront. And it's the reason it is the battlefront, I think, is because I believe that those that are arrogant and want to control realize that if it got down to the school children's level, that this would be a threatening part of the problem for them. And that is to bring in the question of God and spirit in the classroom. Not a particular religion, not even a definite that there is a God, but allow people to investigate it, children to investigate it, and to discuss it openly. And to, if they seek or think any views that are negative or that there is no God, that's okay. And not to slant it in one direction or another, but just allow it to be discussed. The lack of that is causing a serious problem here in the United States and many other countries as well. It is the single greatest, in my opinion, failing in us achieving a spiritual meritocracy. So I want you to think about this very, very strongly, that this is the very fundamental level that is causing us to go awry. You might say, well, what about the people who go to religious schools or private schools that generally are religious? There, the problem is no different. Because if you espouse a certain philosophy, a certain religious ideation, that's no better and maybe just as bad or worse than having no spiritual discussion. So it's not going to, it isn't a solution. What about private schools that have complete openness about this, where they're so rare that it's hard to say? That's, those are the places we should be going to and seeing how those children are doing. But there are very, very few of those. And it would be wonderful if we had at least some evaluation done about what I'm suggesting is what I think is true. Okay, so what would this mean? It would mean that if you have, and I'm going to make it very concrete now, this is an example, because I'm moving towards the middle of the show, and then we're going to have more and more of these examples so that we can understand this better. Well, let's say you have a bunch of kids lying in a classroom. Some of them are amazingly great, okay? let's take a class on algebra. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't like math. Okay, let's take that subject. They're amazingly great in algebra. Some of the kids are. A few. They have just a propensity towards it. We can call it karma, genetics, whatever you want to believe. And they're just really good at it. And they get straight A's on all the tests and everything else. Okay. And at the end of the semester, they get accolades for their teacher. They get a super report card. They get extra credit. They become... they may go into an advanced honors class. They may be get things to put in their file for when they end up eventually going to college, and who knows what else. And they're looked at as by their peers as being the most the best students, and by their teachers. That's the unfortunate reality, as most classrooms are today. But in a spiritually meritocratic classroom, that would not be the way it would be. Instead, those that got the most, we'll say, the best grades, the best everything, would be those who used proportionately the most amount of their abilities, and they did so in the most amount of ways that helps others to do the same. Whoa, that's a little clinker I'm throwing in there. That's called the soul approach. And they continue to do so at progressively greater rates so that they show that they are really moving ahead in that capability. Wow, the use of it. So you might have the person with the lowest score on a quote-unquote totally objective test who is actually considered to be the best student in the class because they came in there with much less capability, much less even knowledge, and they have progressed so far, and they have really taken the effort to do the most with what they have. And they also use it in ways that are helpful towards others doing the same. That would be the very best possible situation. I like that one by that. Yeah, that's the soul element. If we had all of our classrooms, all of our children involved in their education in this way, we then would be only comparing them effectively to themselves as such and to their creator. As they develop more and more of nobility, doing the very best they can, that's what nobility is, they are developing the kind of virtue that puts them closer to being one with their creator. And especially when they share this with others and help others to do the same, that's a really big thing, because now they recognize by helping others to do the same, they're not in competition with others anymore, they're not in competition with anybody. They are only trying to grow themselves while they help others to grow at the same time. And that's how they achieve the best results from their life. Their life becomes more meaningful, and they are rewarded in a very conventional sense that way as well. How long do you think it would take if you had children starting at 5 years old, I'll just pick an age, this method, before they would get the idea that this is the best way to live? And how long do you think it would take before even a generation or so of these children got to reach the age where they were functionally creating the rest of the society, before all of that society would become one of the greatest, if not the greatest, on earth? Think about that. How important is that? How much do you think it would change things if that were the case? I'm going to let you think about that, because we're going to go to break here. And I want you to think about what this first example, where we're going to talk a lot more of these. But you can see what I'm getting at and how this is so different maybe than a lot of people are used to, and why we really need to be looking at this as an alternative to the way we presently live. Now, while you've got that in your mind, you might want to think about how this might apply to other parts of our society in the United States and wherever else you may be living. And when we come back, I will go into much more about this, I think, very interesting but not easy subject to understand.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. This evening we are speaking, I'm speaking to you, about spiritual purpose of meritocracy. And it's a kind of a long-named topic, but if you heard the first part, you know that we're headed in a direction, I hope, that really comes up with some new ideas and gets people thinking about things in a different way. That's what this show's about, and hopefully I'm doing that. So send me some emails if you think that I am, and if you don't think I am, you send me emails about that, too. All right. So let's continue on. I like that first example because I think it's simple enough to kind of picture it in your mind. Some of these other things I'm going to get to are a little more complex, and they may be tricky. And there are questions still to be answered that I will not answer in tonight's show. So they have to be worked on. What I came up with just now is simple enough so that you could actually say, yeah, you could do that, and that might work. Wow, that'd be cool. Have a place like that, you know. And have there been some experiments in this type of environment? Yes. But they have been just that, experiments. They are not, they have not been adopted by any major part of society and put into place. So we need to be looking at trying this as a new method. Because if we can start with the youngsters and get them going, then we're really going to make a difference. At present, we're going in the opposite direction. The present tendency has been to reward those who do the very best, regardless of their capabilities. That makes the people with the least amount of capabilities to suffer. That's not a good thing. And in the other avenue, that was kind of the Bush approach, the last Bush approach. You know, no child left behind. We'll just make sure that those that are exceeding ahead always get ahead, and those that don't, well, we'll just put them in some kind of remedial program. But the other thing is that presently, under the Obama administration, the opposite is true. We now are looking to reward too much people who are just showing up and not really doing the things that we're talking about, because unfortunately this particular administration is relatively communistic and socialistic. And what does that mean? Well, they want to meet people by their needs rather than their capabilities and versus their ability or choices to create more and to be more themselves. So there's little reward in the present day systems in that, and that's what's starting to move into our school systems. On a local level, I suggest strongly you resist that, because that's like the worst possible outcome. We don't want that, because that leads to darkness and eventually to an evil people. I hope we're not moving in that direction. So there we have the idea of wanting to be loving and good turning out to be harmful and destructive, especially to creativity and to spirituality. That's a serious blow that we have to be concerned about. Now, we need to be open-minded, and we need to allow spirituality into the schools in order for this plan to be fully implemented. Believe me, you can't do it if you're going to try to keep spirituality out of it. It won't work. You might think, well, why can't I just adopt half of it and just do that? Just the material part of it. It won't work. It will never work. Because then you're going to be deciding, or someone's going to be deciding besides God, what makes a person really exceptional. And you see, you're going to start putting in all kinds of stuff that ultimately will be limitations. And you say, well, how do you evaluate people then? What is the evaluation? Well, part of it is how much do they put themselves out to give to others, that which they have learned themselves, That's easily evaluated. You can do that without really having to give a test about it. And then on the other side, if you do want to give tests about what a person understands, you look for just that, their understanding, which is a measure of their consciousness, rather than their ability to just spew back some kind of knowledge. Understanding is the ability to take what knowledge they have and use it, apply it in circumstances. Those are the kind of tests you want to give. They almost never are A, B, C, D, or E answers. Okay? So that's it. And I could go deeper into that, but I don't want to because I want people to think about it, to come up with their own ideas of how to do this. Because this is really something that we need to be working together on. But what about other elements of society? Okay, I gave you some kind of a very basic example for education, especially young people's education. But what about other elements of society? What about in the economy? There's a tricky one. So if someone is limited in their capabilities, but they do not produce as much as others, but they produce more than most others do at their level of capability, should we reward them in some way? Yes, we should. Now, this is going to get some people higher up. It's going to be troublesome because I'm very much against the progressives' general ideas. So, in other words, I think most of the ideas of progressive movement people is wrong, but it's not 100% wrong. There's some grains of truth there. And one of the grains of truth is that we as a society should be rewarding people who are creative for their levels of capability. We should be rewarding them in tremendously, we'll say, overt ways. I don't think it should be some kind of like, oh, we'll give them a ribbon or something. No, I don't believe that at all. So I believe that people should pay taxes. I should get some emails from this based upon this model of meritocracy. Taxes should be paid. Now you're going to say, well, taxes should be paid based upon people having to support their government. Yeah, but the government, supporting the government is the people. So what we're saying is the more that someone is supporting the people by putting out their most effort at their level of capability, the less they are taking from anybody else to stay alive or to do anything, the more they're giving to others. And particularly if they're sharing this with others, again, leading into the soul side of things, then their reward should not only be the reward for what they produce, but the reward for what they produce in terms of their goodness to others, in their increase in virtue in themselves, that then leads to them giving more to others, and then not taking so much from everyone else. So if a person has a limited capability of producing whatever, but they do the very best job they can, they would pay the least amount of taxes on their income. Are you hearing me? Okay. Now, that's a kind of radical approach. And you're going to say, well, how are you going to prove that? How are you going to measure that? I said I'm not going to come up with all the solutions. I'm just giving you the ideas. How you can do this is not any more complicated than our present system, I guarantee that, and probably a lot less complicated. But you would have to have submitted with people's tax returns probably their life pursuits and some answers from those they have interactions with and a lot of other things like that. You see, it's not going to be just some kind of simple process, but it will be one that is incredibly fair and one that truly rewards people for doing the best they can with who and what they are, making themselves into better and better people. That society would grow so quickly economically, it would be hard to keep track at how fast things would move. We're talking about a whole new paradigm. outside of capitalism, far outside of capitalism, outside of communism, because it isn't based just on need, outside of socialism, because the government's not going to run things. You might say, well, isn't the government going to decide about the taxes? No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. You can have a system in which the person themselves gives a valuation, other people can give an evaluation, and the government just acts like a referee. Therefore, the government really isn't involved much in it at all. But they aren't charged as much in taxes. They're just in a lower bracket, I guess you would call it. But a higher level of reward for their spiritual meritocracy that they exist within. Okay. I'm sure that that is getting some people thinking. So what would that do? Let me try to draw this out here. What would that do to the society, since I already made the broad statement that the economy would like go blast off? Why is that true? Because all those who do their very best are the most rewarded. And those who do their very worst are the least rewarded, and they are continuously encouraged by their own selfishness and nothing else to do better. They're not punished, not in the sense that, at least I call it punishment. Some people might say, well, they're paying higher taxes. Yeah, they're paying higher taxes, but it's because they also aren't really improving themselves or their society. They aren't improving anything. This is really about them and becoming a greater part of God through nobility. They're ignoble. You know, they don't have the right stuff, and they're exemplifying it. So what does that mean if you happen to be a billionaire, but you like to go on vacation every 5 minutes and do anything else that you feel like doing because you got a lot of money? Well, you don't pay a hell of a lot of taxes. Because you're not trying to do anything with your life. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, oh, boy, that's not going to be so great for some of those people. That's true. But what happens if you're a relatively poor person and you choose the same thing? You're going to be paying a lot of taxes as well. You're going to get less money. And you're going to pay by having a much more difficult material life. But it's also going to be shown to you, and it's going to be meant to be shown through the system that I'm talking about, that this is really spiritually based. And you're not being punished, but you're also not being rewarded for your selfishness and your lack of willingness to produce. Okay? Let's move to health. What about those that can't produce because they have mental illness? Not about physical. Physical is easy. I want to go to the hard side. Mental illness. If a person is mentally ill, we use the word illness here, then their capability is less, and they are not going to be as capable. Therefore, the amount they produce will be much less than somebody who isn't, yet has all other capabilities the same. So illness is looked at as a capability issue. But isn't illness then? Some people cause illness. Some people, by their lifestyle and smoking and doing other things, cause themselves to be ill. Shouldn't they therefore not have, should they be punished in the system or something like that? Now, again, saying no. No. Not true. A person being where they're at the moment is the key. You don't go back in time, because if we all go back in time and we look at our karma, we all have done terrible things. We all are far from perfect. And so saying that somebody did something some time ago that made themselves ill, and therefore because they did those things, we're going to, say, tax them more than others who didn't do those things, I don't believe that's the correct method. The correct method is to take the person as they are at the time, for that year, if it's on an annual basis, and see what they produce for that year. And even if they did cause all the problems, they still will respond to the system because they still Well, it'll be based on what they produce for that year, based upon their capabilities, sure. They may have done some things that have harmed them themselves in the past, but they're still going to be responsive to wanting to grow in the system I'm suggesting. It may not be as fast as if you punish them, and it may not be as fast if you tax them because they made themselves unhealthy, but it's a better system. It's a system in which choice is still part of it, and you're giving them the choice rather than being punitive. So this is different than what we're seeing today as well, especially in the present healthcare situation, where they're starting to talk about a healthcare plan where boards of people will decide whether or not we're living the right lifestyle and then how much we're going to pay in taxes, which they call healthcare fees and costs, so that we are paying our fair share, you see. Well, that's another progressive mistake. Wrong. It doesn't solve the problem. It makes it worse, actually. I'm not going to go into all the details of how it makes it worse, but it does make it worse. If you think about it, I think you'll figure out why. Okay, so there's another answer for you. What about things like military? I mean, we still have struggles. We have a military, we have police forces, etc. What about those people who are risking their lives and who are doing so at the cost of possibly losing their life, but they're trying to support the values of the country, etc.? How does that work out? Are they doing their capabilities? Well, it's the same thing. You apply it towards them in the areas that they have chosen to work with in the military or police. And so you see, you don't have to, using this method, look at every institution as being something different, because you can kind of have a general approach. How much is someone capable, and how much are they actually choosing to be responsible and using those capabilities to the best level and helping others to do the same? And therefore, now rank in the military becomes also dependent upon the same process, not just whether they're going to get paid a certain amount, but also how they advance in their abilities in the military. You might say, well, how is that going to work? Because I don't want someone who might become a general because they're only mediocre in their work, but in what they produce, but at the same time, they're doing the best they can based upon their level. How do you solve that problem? Well, as I said, I'm not going to come up with all the solutions tonight. I'm just going to mention the problem so you can kind of try to figure out how that can be applied. And maybe in some elements, in some places, you can't do that. What if someone wants to do neurosurgery and they are a pretty poor neurosurgeon, but they're very good for their level of capability? Should they be allowed to do that? Well, maybe, up to a certain level. But then again, they may not have any patients. Because part of it is to let others know their capability. And if it's something that people can be informed about, that's fine. That doesn't solve the problem for the military, though. Military is a different issue, because then they're providing something that has an effect on so many others, you see. But here's the point. If you're evaluating the effect on others, as I suggested, how much are they helping others to do the same or better, then you look at that as an issue, and now it does become a way of mitigating or modifying how far up the rank somebody can go if they are not very capable, but they do the very best they can, because they can only reach so far up the ranks before they are adversely affecting others rather than improving others. And if that's the case, there you got an answer, you see. Oh, I didn't want to give it to you quite that easily. I should watch myself here. I want to leave some of this a mystery tonight. But it's something to think about. And there's lots of other ways to also deal with these issues. Okay, let's move on to another subject. I got a lot of them tonight. Oh, yes. What about those who are actual inventors? What about the people who invent things and create new stuff, you know? I've got a few inventions I've done myself. A patent or so is in the works, maybe. The point is that, you know, the thing is that when we look at this and we see how it all plays out, If someone is a great inventor, should they benefit from the invention? Or how about a songwriter? How about an actor? How about an artist of some other sort? Acting is an art. And so, what about those people? Did they, if you're less capable, but you do a great job, how do you reward those people? Well, again, there's two ways to look at this. How much does the invention, the acting, the art affect those others? How much does it do that, and how much does it do the reverse? These are very important issues that we get to, and that's how capitalism also plays into it. Now, I think I have a caller online. Caller, are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Who is this?
This is Steve.
Hi, Steve. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Great. Nice for you to call in. You have something you want to say?
Yeah, I was just wondering, why can it be so difficult and trying sometimes for us, when even if we're a happy person, you know?
Why is it so difficult to try? Well,
why is it so difficult and trying for us? But even though we're happy, we try and have positive in us.
Yeah. For most people, when they find that their life is not to their liking, it's because they're not doing things that are meaningful to themselves and others. In other words, they're not creating something that is really meaningful in their own life and also as it affects others. And then they feel that life is very difficult and trying. The same life to someone else that has a great deal of meaning, they might be willing to put a lot more effort into and even face the dilemmas and problems that they have with more courage and less strain, because they find meaning in it. It makes them feel that there is really a good reason for them to be here and a good reason for them to face all the problems that come out of doing so. This is a tough place to be, you know, the physical world.
Like I feel like, you know, I try and believe that no matter what happens, you know, like the great creator, however you want to think of the great creator, won't give you up. The great creator will never let you down. Even though you might like run around, he'll never desert you. You know,
well,
like,
I would
never
agree with that.
Cry,
I would
never
going to
say goodbye, tell a lie, or even hurt you.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Steve. Except think about it this way: the creator also wants you to be free to make your own choices. So if you make choices that don't allow you to find great meaning in what you're doing, don't allow you to willing to make sacrifices and face dilemmas that come about naturally as you try to create. Creation is always difficult. The result is your co-creation with that creator may be separated by your choices that you've made, which are not as good as they could be. So while God or the creator supports us, that doesn't mean God is always there coddling us and protecting us from everything, because if that happens, then we won't grow. We won't make any changes, and we might become complacent.
But never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you.
Okay, thank you for the singing. And continue listening to the show, and I'm going to continue on with what I'm talking about now. But thank you for that little rendition. Okay, so let me go on. And I'll tie in something I just said to Steve into what we're talking about in general about a meritocracy. And that is that it's incumbent upon us to realize that my suggestion of how the Creator or God exists is not as a being of parental kind of protections. If that were true, then there's a lot of things that are contradictory to that, and we would have to make up a lot of excuses. And I don't want to make any excuses for the God that I picture. The God I picture needs no excuses for its beingness. Rather, the God I'm suggesting is a God that is attempting to help us to see that spiritual meritocracy is part of its own existence, if I'm right about this. And that's something for all of you to think about and consider. So in that vein, that particular being is open to allowing us to be free to even cause us ourselves harm if we choose to do that. Now, does that mean that under the worst of circumstances, if we reach out and ask that being to be of some help, and we genuinely seek to be noble and to create ourselves as much as possible into being a replica of that being in some way, to exemplify some element of that being in our life, then will we possibly receive some grace, some ability to be helped along? I believe yes. So I don't know if Steve is listening still, but if he is, that may comfort him to some extent, at least from what I'm saying. And I think he's got his own comfort from his own belief structure. But it's important to realize that if we look at God in a more traditional way, that God could actually be harmful, because it would promote by some, in some people, the belief that no matter what they do, they will receive, because they just accept God and God accepts them, and God will take care of them in the same order, in the same way as all others. Then you're getting closer to the progressive side, to the communistic side, that God takes care of all because God is such a loving being. But love, is love really just giving, or is love giving in very wise and helpful ways to help us to develop? I say the second. The God that I'm talking about is a wise God who doesn't just give because we ask for giving. We receive based upon the fact that we have taken God's giving as part of our own, and we are willing to become a part of this system that exemplifies God in our own actions rather than just because we say we want it. How simple is that? I know a lot of people in their religious views think exactly that, and that's okay. I accept that that's their thought. The only problem with that in my mind is that it leads to an issue where God becomes almost the babysitter. And all of our choices become deterministic issues. And there's a lot of problems with that model. So many contradictions, I can't go into them tonight because it's too complicated, too long to discuss. But I'm sure that this starts making some sense. So I thank Steve for bringing up the religious elements of contradiction and problems that could come about from this. Now let's move on to at least one other example, because we're running out of time, as usual. No, we could go on for hours on this probably. But okay, so what is the next issue? What is the next part that we need to be looking at if we're going to try to develop spiritual purpose in meritocracy and try to have a meritocracy there? People are truly, truly working towards becoming a more spiritually developed society, a more, we'll say, successful, truly, in the fullest sense of meaning in life, society. And that's the foundation issue. Where does this type of thing come from in terms, like the founders are trying to find it in the United States, but they were not able to find the balance? So it seems to be in being able to mold together the first two parts of God's mind and have these first two parts produce a physical outcome, which put the whole part of God's mind, because physical has to do with the third part of God's mind, is like the energy side of things. And so in particular, very important where we live right now in the physical world. So it really affects that part of existence. So if we're going to achieve this balance, the best model that I have come across and the best way to create a balance is to have the two sides test each other in almost every aspect that it's applied in. So you can't look at just, are people becoming more creative? You have to also at the same time say, are people becoming more creative and more willing to give that creativity to others, to help others to do the same? and therefore become, and this is going to scare the hell out of some people, become less creative. Because in some parts of it, you're going to lose some creativity. If you, it can't be 100% all creativity without being concerned about helping others to be creative. So you're going to actually cut down the thing that everybody in this country is so attuned to, competition. You've got to have competition in general if you're comparing the outcome of things, like the services provided. That's what I was showing you with military example, with inventions and that sort of thing. But competition should not be included in people giving to each other. There should not be competition in how much someone gives. The competition should be how much someone gives to help others to give, and therefore that prevents that from going on. So if you really balance the system out, you do so by comparing both sides of the equation together. And it's difficult to do. It's complicated to do. But if you think about it, it's the solution. And that's where we need to be headed towards. We need a society, we need a world that is going to have people in it who are living like people maybe that are going to live outside of what we consider the human race today. So they have some elements that are special and that really make them into greater beings than we have been up to this point. We are capable as human beings to be this way. We just haven't chosen this to be really what we aim for. But we need to be looking at that because that's where I think we can get to. So by balancing the two sides and continually asking the question, is the love that is being given in a wise way balancing with the amount of total creativity and freedom? And are these two working together and not apart, not against each other? And are the results, that's the energy side, the results the only thing that's competitive? The only thing that's competitive are the actual results, not ever what people are doing to get to those results. And that's where our mistake has been in the past, is we put most of the competition involved in getting to the results, not the results themselves, and that is not a good way to use competition. Never has been, in my opinion. But it's something else to consider, and I realize that that needs a whole show just to cover that one concept, because it's so complicated. If you haven't tried it, you should try Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol. It's made by ForeverYoungProducts.com. You can reach them at 800-777-7850. I use it. Lots of people I know are using it, and it helps you to stay younger. It does many other great things, and it also works as well or better on your pets, dogs and cats. It's available in two different formulas, one for people and one for animals. Try it. I think you'll find it's really great. Okay? And that's it for tonight. So until next week, I hope that you will consider everything I said in tonight's show. I know some of it I could not complete, and that's always the case, I'm afraid. But until next week, this has been Niles McClower for Why Life Is.